Nanny looked at him for a moment.
So was he the...
Yes.
You mean he really did do the murder?
What do you think, said Granny.
Well, if it comes to it, I think he didn't, said Nanny. Can I have a word in your ear, Esme? I don't reckon I should say this in front of young Walter.
The witches bent their heads together. There was a brief, whispered conversation.
Everything is simple when you know the answer, said Granny. I'll be back soon.
She hurried off. Nanny heard her shoes clattering on the stairs. Nanny looked down at Walter again and held out her hand. Up you get, Walter.
Yes, Mrs. Ogg.
I expect we'd better find somewhere for you to lie low, eh?
I know a hidden place, Mrs. Ogg.
You do you? Walter lurched across the roof towards another trap door and pointed to it proudly.
That? Said Nanny. That doesn't look very hidden to me, Walter.
Walter gave it a puzzled look and then grinned in the way a scientist might after he'd solved a particularly difficult equation.
It's hidden where everyone can see it, Mrs. Ogg.
Nanny gave him a sharp look, but there was nothing but a slightly glazed innocence in Walter's eyes. He lifted up the trapdoor and pointed politely downwards.
You go down the ladder first, so I will not see your drawers.
Very kind of you, said Nanny.
It was the first time anyone had ever said anything like that to her. The man waited patiently until she had reached the bottom of the ladder, and then climbed laboriously down after her.
This is just an old staircase, isn't it? Said Nanny, prodding at the darkness with her torch.
Yes, it goes all the way down, except at the bottom where it goes all the way up.
Anyone else know about it?
The ghost, Mrs. Ogg, said Walter, climbing down.
Oh, yes, said Nanny slowly. And where's the ghost now, Walter?
He ran away.
She held up the torch. There was still nothing to be read in Walter's expression.
What does the ghost do here, Walter?
He watches over the opera.
That's very kind of him, I'm sure.
Nanny started downwards, and as the shadows danced around her, she heard Walter say,
You know she asked me a very silly question, Mrs. Ogg. It was a silly question. Any fool knows the answer.
Oh, yes, said Nanny, peering at the walls. About houses on fire, I expect.
Yes. What would I take out of our house if it was on fire?
I expect you were a good boy and said you'd take your mum, said Nanny.
No, my mum would take herself.
Nanny ran her hands over the nearest wall. Doors had been nailed shut when the staircase had been abandoned. Someone walking up and down here with a keen pair of ears could hear a lot of things.
What would you take out then, Walter? She said.
The fire!
Nanny stared unseeing at the wall, and then her face slowly broke into a grin.
You're daft, Walter Plinge, she said. Daft as a broom, Mrs. Ogg, said Walter cheerfully.
But you ain't insane, she thought. You're daft, but you're sane. That's what Esme would say. And there's worser things.
Gribo pounded along Broadway. He was suddenly not feeling very well. Muscles were twitching in odd ways. A tingling at the base of his spine indicated that his tail wanted to grow, and his ears definitely wanted to creep up the sides of his head, which is always embarrassing when it happens in company. In this case, the company was about 100 yards behind and apparently intent on moving his ears quite a long way from their current position, embarrassment or not. It was gaining, too. Gribo normally had a famous turn of speed, but not when his knees were trying to reverse direction every few seconds. His normal plan, when pursued, was to jump onto the water butt behind Nanny Ogg's cottage and rake the pursuer across the nose with his claws when it came around the corner. Since this would now involve a 500-mile dash, an alternative had to be sought. There was a coach waiting outside one of the houses. He lurched over to it, pulled himself up, grabbed the reins, and briefly turned his attention to the driver.
Get off!
Gribo's teeth shone in the moonlight. The coachman, with great presence of mind and urgent absence of body, somersaulted backwards into the night. The horses reared and tried to break into a gallop from a standing start. Animals are less capable of being fooled than are humans. They knew that what they had behind them was a very large cat, and the fact that it was man-shaped didn't make them any happier. The coach lumbered off. Gribo looked over his twitching shoulder at the torch-lit crowd and waved a paw derisively. The effect pleased him so much that he clambered onto the roof of the swaying coach and continued to jeer. It is a cat-like attribute to spit defiance at the enemy from a place of safety. In the circumstances, it would have been better if cat-like attributes had included the ability to steer. A wheel hit the parapet of the brass bridge and scraped along it, the iron rim kicking up sparks. The shock knocked Gribo from his perch in mid-gesture. He landed on his feet in the middle of the road, while the terrified horses continued on with the coach, rocking dangerously from side to side. The pursuers stopped.
What's he doing now? He's just standing there. There's only one of him, and there's lots of us, right? We could easily overpower him. Good idea. On the count of three, we'll all rush him, right? One, two, three.
Pause.
You didn't run.
Well, nor did you.
Yes, but I was the one saying one, two, three.
Remember what he did to Mr. Pounder?
Yes, well, I never liked the man all that much.
Gribo snarled. Ticklish things were happening to his body. He threw his head back and roared.
Look, at worst he'd only be able to get one or two of us. Oh, that's good, is it? Here, why is he twisting round like that?
Maybe he hurt himself falling off the coach.
Let's get him!